My talk is called Unix Principles for Science Simulations. And I work as a researcher and a teacher at Aarhus University in Denmark. And I was previously working at various universities in Denmark and outside of it. I like to work with topics of ice sheets, glaciers, and climates, because they are a big unknown in the future sea level rise budgets. So if we want to improve our prediction of future sea level rise, you get most out of your time by studying ice sheets and glaciers. I'm also interested in earthquake and landslide physics and modeling fluid flows and granular materials, since those are fundamental to a lot of geological processes. So, granular materials are everywhere. What are granular materials? Granular materials are sediments, and they basically consist of individual particles, like sand on the beach or sediment in a hill slope or various pills and pellets in industry. So actually the handling and transport of granular materials consumes roughly 10% of world energy consumption. So that's quite a lot. So a lot of processes in industry involve mining things into bits, into smaller chunks, and transporting those chunks around and processing them in some way. Unfortunately, the physics and the mechanical behavior of granular materials are hard to deal with, so for that reason we can inform ourselves about the physics by doing scientific simulations. You can use something called the discrete element methods, or the DEM in short, to simulate granular materials. And I'm going to use that method and simulation type to illustrate what I'm going to talk about here, which could easily be applied to other scientific problems as well. So the basics of the discrete element method are that you represent each grain or particle individually. So this is what is called a Lagrangian framework. So basically, in your program, you keep track of each grain that you're simulating, and you update the grain position and velocity and acceleration over time to keep track of where it's located in your simulated space. You also resolve all mechanical interactions between grains. So if two grains are touching, they should push each other away. And you also need to keep track of if the grains are forced by some external contribution. For instance, if it's sand sitting on a beach and a wave rolls over, the water would add a force to each grain because of the velocity difference. So that's an example of an external forcing. Once you have all of your forces worked out, you need to figure out what the resultant acceleration and velocity does and how the grain moves as a result of these forces. Then you can go to the next time step. So the discrete element method has been used for a lot of things, and some of the applications that are on the top of my head are things like sediment mechanics. So this is important for geoscientific simulations. It could, for instance, be the stability of beaches during tsunamis. So in a tsunami, you have a lot of sediment grains lying on the beach and a huge wave rolls over. Is the beach going to be stable or not? That's pretty important to know and also do some risk assessment on. You can also simulate landslides. So for instance, if there is a lot of rain, you can figure out if your slope is going to slide downhill or not with this kind of method. You can also simulate if a certain perturbation could trigger an earthquake deep within the Earth crust. You can use the method to simulate how the early solar system evolved from loose debris into planetoids and planets. You can simulate how impact of a meteor would create a crater on the Earth's surface. You can simulate rock failure. For instance, if you dig a tunnel into a mountain, how much stress the tunnel can support before collapsing. You can also model how icebergs or sea ice floating on the ocean surface is blown around by wind or ocean currents. You can also simulate how your prototype Mars rover will sink into the Mars surface, which is a loose dust. This is also called a regolith. You can simulate industrial processes. The thing is that granular materials really don't like to mix. They really like to segregate into individual components. So the fine particles would tend to move to the bottom and the coarse particles would tend to move to the top. This is actually the same that you see in a box of mixed cereal or mixed nuts. If you shake it for a bit, then the large nuts will end lying on the surface and the fine dust will move to the bottom. So if you're trying to produce some kind of headache pills in pharmaceutical manufacturing, you really want to avoid this size segregation because you don't want all of your active ingredients to end up in, and more, there are a lot of reasons to use this method for different problems. So there are some basic steps that are included in any kind of discrete element simulation. So first off, you need to specify your starting conditions. So you typically place some grains somewhere in simulation space and you specify their mechanical properties. For instance, how much they weigh, how stiff they are, and their shape and size and things like that. That would typically be the first step. Next off, you need to specify some boundary conditions. For instance, if they are being pushed together because of weight of some overburden and other things. You might also want to add gravity, for instance, if you are planning to simulate something on the Earth's surface, for example. Next is the main step, which is that you run your simulation through model time in small time increments. And this is what takes a lot of time. This is the computationally intensive part. And within this, you start off by identifying all grain-grain contacts. You then resolve the contact mechanics. So you find the grain-grain forces on each grain. You add any external forces, for instance, gravity to each grain. You update the acceleration of each grain based on what forces are acting on it, forces and torques. You then use the results in acceleration and use it to determine the new velocity and position from a force balance calculation. So this has to be done both for linear movement and rotational movement, if your grain is spinning, basically. Then you are ready to advance your model time by adding a small time increment dt, and you may want to save the model state to disk so you afterwards can check out what the progression was over the course of the simulation. If the simulation has come to an end, you end the program, free all arrays, and probably also print the state and save it to disk. Finally, you can perform statistics on this output, or you can visualize the grain behavior over time. So these are the typical steps of such a simulation. There are many types of DM software. I've authored a few, and there are many out there. The problem, in my opinion, is that they all use a custom markup and a custom syntax and a custom way of configuring a simulation in each particular piece of software. So here's an example from a widely used DM piece of software called LAMPS. And this is from one of their examples. So it's over 100 lines of this weird file format, which is then read by the program passed by it. you can see here in this example, they specify that the simulation should consist of spheres, so spherical grains. It should read some prior states. This is the read restart line. They specify some domain in the region line. They specify the grain properties in pair style. They add some walls around the granular assemblage and so on and so forth. So a solution could be to use a Unix-like design. Here you would split your software functionality into smaller programs. Each program should do one thing and do it well. The smaller programs should communicate in plain text in a common format. You should ideally use pipes or files as inter-process communication. And ideally you would document their use with a well-written man pages. If you have a modular design, you can have intercompatibility as a feature to the user. So with that, you can combine your simulation tools with, for instance, Unix text processing tools and have a lot of flexibility at hand as an end user. I'm going to illustrate this example with a piece of DM software. It's called Granular. It's a granular dynamic simulation code. It uses the so-called soft body discrete element methods. It's written in C99, uses POSIX make and shell. And yeah, it's in general POSIX compatible, so you don't get any strange surprises moving to different platforms. It's intended as a successor to three older pieces of DM software that I've written, and I won't cover those here. But this is basically to say that this is my fourth iteration of this type of software, and I think it's getting better each time. Common to the pieces of software in this granular software is that they communicate with a common file format called granular. So this adheres to Unix principles. The design is heavily inspired by SVEET. So there I learned about this idea of having a common file format and smaller tools to handle different tasks that you might want to do. So here's an example. This is from the man page on the file format. So this is a format for granular dynamic simulations. So each line in this file would represent one grain and contain all information and all data associated with this single grain. So unfortunately, there is a lot of data. You see, we have 55 columns in the format as it is now. And that's not really optimal in my opinion, but on the other hand, you also want to keep all information across this file and process communication. So for that reason, you need many columns. Fortunately, there is consistent behavior across the different programs in this software suite. So they all communicate with this format that I just described. It reuses as much code between the programs as possible. And the argument names, the optional argument names, are also consistent between the different programs. So if you use one argument to specify something in one program, it will be recognized in the same manner in another program. So that makes it easy to substitute different parts and perhaps to recognize and remember some of these parameters. So there are two programs to specify grain positions and properties. Remember, that was the first step of this type of simulation. So the first program creates a single grain. With command line options, you can specify its position, its velocity, and so on. So with that, a single grain is written to standard out as a single line in this common format. There's also another program that's not creates a single grain but many grains in a packing. So for instance, 10 by 10 by 10 grains in a cubic packing or a triangular packing or whatever you would want to do. And the granular packing program can also create random grain size distributions. For example, let's say that you want to have sizes of your grains spanning some range, and there are options to do that. You then need to specify the boundary conditions. This is done with the granular program itself. And then you do the actual simulation. This is also done by the granular program itself. For the time being, all parts of step 3 are in one program. And I know this isn't strictly Unix philosophy, but it's simply because of performance reasons. That I would like to keep it within the same C program. But who knows, I might redecide at a later point in time. Finally, we have some outputs and we can do something with this output. We can, for instance, do statistics on the kinetic energy of the grains and thermal energy of the grains using granular energy. We can also plot the grains to PDF or PNG or something like that with granular to IMG. So this is really just a wrapper around GNUplot. And finally, we have granular to VTU, which reads the granular file formats and then outputs something in Ugly XML for VTK, the visualization toolkit. That is admittedly quite nice for doing three-dimensional renderings of particles. So, this is an example. I know there was this big ugly program that did the main part, step 3, actually involving the simulation itself, but in the code it's actually not that complex. So in the main loop, line 66, it reads the grains in this format from standard inputs. Then there is some acceleration added. This would be gravitational drag. Line 68, we set a time step. So the problem is that if you use a very large time step, then your numerical algorithm becomes unstable and it basically explodes. So this line 68 produces a suitable value based on your parameter choices. 69 and 70, the simulation is run until the end time. Finally, the end state is printed to standard outputs and we free all dynamically allocated memory. And that's basically it for that program outside of option parsing. Let's say you need something else. Well, it's quite easy to modify a program like this or write your own version of it. You can simply, instead of running a time loop, you can ask it to only run the simulation for a single time step. And then you can add some additional physics. For instance, if you want to add drag from ocean or atmosphere or water, anything like that, then you can simply add that. So it's not too complicated to extend. So some examples to finish off with. The first example, here you generate a packing. That's the first command, granular packing. Then you simulate its behavior over time, and then you pipe a PDF of the output to a PDF viewer and see the final state. So that's a really easy way to do something instead of having over 100 lines of weird configuration syntax. You can also customize it a bit further. For instance, let's say you want to have two single grains at two positions and you want to smash one particle into the other, then you can do it with a line like this. Next, you can of course also use other Unix tools to do statistics on the output. So here in this example, we generate a packing. We're only interested in the diameter, which is the first row, the first column in the granular file formats, and then we calculate the mean. And the mean program is really just a small awk program to do this calculation. We can also generate what's called a power law size distribution in the packing and then plot the sizes as a PDF. So as you can see, it's very easy to customize and work with standard Unix tools with this kind of design. Yeah. So a bit more of a thorough example. This is also a two-grain collision, so one grain smashing into another one. We start off by specifying some common simulation ID. We remove all prior output associated with this ID. Next, we create the grains, the two single grains, and simulate them for a total of 4 seconds and create output files at a time interval of 0.1 seconds. We then loop over all the output files and plot them as PNG files. Here you can see that we plot the 14th field in the granular file format, and this would be the force in the x direction. We also label our plots, so it says force underscore x in units of Newton. And we ask it to output in PNG format instead of the default, which is PDF. And we save it as a PNG file to disk. Next, we make an animation with FFmpeg and save it as an MP4 file to disk. We also want to monitor the energy over the simulation, so we create an empty file and then append the kinetic energy for each time step and append it to this energy file. So we end up with an energy.tsv file, which for each simulation time step has the total kinetic energy recorded. And then we can use gnuplot to plot this energy over time. So yeah, quite easy to work with. This program is far from finished. It's still in heavy development. So on my to-do is to learn more about Unix program design and hopefully improve. I would also like a tool to generate granular packings from satellite images. So for instance, given an image of the ocean with icebergs, it would be nice for it to read the positions of these icebergs and create grains. And then we can read wind data and simulate how these icebergs are moving around and colliding. So that would be an additional tool, for instance, for this kind of simulation design. I need to implement a more efficient contact search. So right now it's all-to-all contact search, but it can and definitely will be much more optimized. So it doesn't scale with the number of particles squared. I also need to refine the contact mechanics. There's more that can be done there. And then I would like to parallelize with MPI. But this program is just for fun, something I do at evenings, for now at least. But I might use it for my main project work sometime in the future. So thank you all for listening. Sorry about the problems. I hope it worked out well. Thank you everyone that has shared well-designed software so we can learn. In particular, Evil Bob for S-Feed inspiration. Thank you, Christoph, for arranging this conference. And I'm looking forward to seeing the next day's presentations. Thanks, guys.